This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Thinker Girls Pod channel. I am Stacey June.
And I'm Christy Mercer. And welcome to our place of business, of residence.
We will be your hosts this afternoon. And this is an interview podcast part two.
Well, it could even be in the morning. You could be listening to it in the middle of the night. That's the beauty of podcasts, really, isn't it? You can listen whenever you goddamn like.
Yeah, well, it's the afternoon for me. So. Yeah.
Not when somebody else tells you when you should listen or watch. Isn't it so interesting? It's like how rebellious you get when it's like, a TV show these days, if it's like on, you know, whatever, 7, 9, 10, ABC, whatever, it's like it's on at 7. Part of me's like, I'm not watching then. I'll watch when I want.
I still get a thrill about watching some television live.
Why? Because you're like, it's as it's happening.
I was wondering if The Block was actually live, which it obviously isn't. Yeah, but when I say the show isn't, but the finale.
Do you know how I know it's
not? We speak about The Block this week, actually, yeah. Which is so bizarre.
Do you know how I know it's not? Because it's coming, my mum froths on The Block. Mm. She lives around the corner from it, and every year she lines up and goes to the Out hoping for inspection. And she told me this year, she goes, the crowds are really big whenever they do it, and I just thought, oh, stuff waiting and being part of the crowds with everybody. So I just decided before, as they were doing the finishing touches on all of the apartments a few weeks ago, she just popped her head into the building site and walked through some of the apartments until the builders were like, oi, what are you doing, crazy lady, in just your workout
here? And
she was
taking a million photos and putting
them
on Facebook.
She just goes, oh, no, just plays dumb. You wonder where I get it from. She's just like, oh, I just thought I could come in here. I'm like, you are such a rogue.
So what has that got to do with knowing that it's definitely not live?
Because she was like telling me weeks and weeks ago that they were completed.
Right. Well, they could have just sat there for a while until auction.
Yeah, that's what I mean. On the series, it's like they were completed more recently than in reality they were.
Right.
Because when Mum told me she went through and they were basically all done.
But I think they stop recording and then they do the they wait for ages, do all the promo, and then they do a live finale.
A live? Is it the finale live?
Yes, because it's a live auction. That's why I like to watch it, because I was like, wow, are they finding out they've just won $200,000 right in this moment? I like the energy of that. That will never go from me. Oh, like, I like it. But my TV doesn't do digital television, so I have to stream it off my phone anyway.
Oh, good Lord.
Anyway, this is not about The Block. That is coming on the 411 later in the week.
No, but somebody that you may know, let's link it back to telly, you may know his face from TV.
Mm-hmm.
He is, you would say a reality show expert now. He's been on three seasons of the goddamn thing. Mm. Tim Dormer, we're talking about, who won Australian Big Brother.
That's right.
Back in the day.
Yes. Now, we are airing the part two of this episode. We aired the part one yesterday. And it was interesting when we go into detail behind the scenes and start cracking things open. For a very long time, you and I were cutting into these podcasts. Our producer does most of the work now, and very rarely do we hear from her. I don't know where to pull this. I'm at a point where I'm like, someone's going to have a listen to it. You listened over to it, still nothing. And then I said, well, I remember the chat. I remember it feeling like it was jam-packed with goodness. Why don't we just do two parts?
Which is, as you say, rare.
It is rare.
Because often there's, you know, we'll repeat ourselves. There'll be whatever, bits and pieces that you can chop out and the gems that are left. There were too many gems in this one to cut, especially this really interesting conversation that I think we're pretty open and open to hearing different takes a lot of the time from different people. Not to say you constantly agree with them, but it's pretty rare, I reckon, where we both sit back and go, oh, yeah. Why haven't we thought of that? And I think Tim Dormer's brain works that way a lot, especially when it comes to relationships, when it comes to monogamy. And that was a really fascinating part of this conversation, part two.
I completely agree with you. I very rarely feel like challenged in my brain with a conversation. I feel like I'm a conversation contributor and I will have a feeling or an opinion or maybe a story or maybe something where I feel like I can connect. Tim takes your brain to a part where you may not have explored before. And I really respect that in him.
Same.
Which is why we're really big supporters of what he does and think it's really important that the things that he thinks are put out there. So this episode is part two. The interviews are barely chopped. And we hope you enjoyed as much as we did.
I was a virgin till I think I was 28, 29.
And you're a man.
I know.
Like,
is that from your religious upbringing or what?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. And I don't know when is the right time for someone to lose their virginity. For me, it worked. I kind of like the emotional intelligence that I have, I think, is because through my 20s, I wasn't dealing with really emotional, tricky stuff
That's so interesting.
And black holes. Everyone has black holes in their 20s. It's just full of massive black potholes.
Yeah.
People getting stuck in them.
Yeah.
I think I 2012 audition. I'd just been let go from a really, really cool radio TV job on the Gold Coast. And I moved back to Sydney with my towel between my legs going, what am I going to do? And then I heard, oh, Big Brother's coming back. And I went, you know what? That would be a great back in to that industry. Would I do reality TV? And I thought, okay, yep, we'll do this. So 2012 applied, got through the whole rounds of auditions, was going to go in the house as an intruder. And then it didn't happen. They put a girl in instead of a guy. It just came down to the sex, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they said, oh, look, you're top of mind for next year. I kind of in my heart knew that it was going to happen. It was strange. And I thought, I've got a year now before this big crazy life thing's going to happen. And I just worked out. I think I had a little part-time job and then just like had sex with a lot of people.
But was that the first time you'd had sex in
that year? Around that time was sort of when I was really finding myself. First time I moved to Sydney and kind of lived, like I lived on my own on the Gold Coast. It was a different scene, I guess, and I was working so hard up there.
Sydney's hardcore too. You get here and you start playing.
There's an intensity around it for sure.
And it demands you. It demands your attention a bit. So you start going out and Ashes, how do you guys meet?
It was just a Grindr hookup, random Grindr hookup. But I don't know, we both... Like, I guess he was one of many guys and girls of that year, but I don't know. Is it a sliding doors moment again where, for whatever reason, we reconnected and then, like, it wasn't right timing for love the first time around?
Did you keep thinking about him even though it was you're in a random place?
He was probably one of the best-looking people that I ever did hook up with. So I kind of, like, when he did come back into my life, I knew who he was.
Yeah,
but I don't know. We sometimes still go back to the park and make really great love under the moon that we first hooked on.
That same park.
Yeah. And I would never tell my family that's how we met. But
now they know.
I don't judge people for how they meet people in life. If you want to use a dating app, use a dating app.
No
it's bro, it is hard enough to meet decent people. Who gives a fuck? So you guys hook up again and you head to Big Brother. You come out. You
for the
do
first
all
time.
This stuff. And so sitting here today and looking at where your relationship sits, is it fairly in inverted commas, normal?
Oh, no. Hell no. No. And I think, do you know what? A really big journey that I've been on the last 12 months is understanding that maybe no relationship is normal and... I'm putting it in the context of the marriage equality debate last year. Like, we got engaged in May, came back, told family, and they were like, oh, like, some of my family said, we don't support this. Like, I've got no words to say. Like, I've lost my brother or something. It was just really... Then June or July, I think it was announced that we were going to do the plebiscite. All of a sudden, we were now fighting again, or I felt like I was fighting again to hold on to this relationship and to now prove that we can get married. We are just like you. Our love is just like any heterosexual romance. And that was my big mentality for the whole of that campaign, was trying to prove we're just like you. Now I kind of wonder, maybe we're not.
Did you feel more, did you feel more pressure?
But what do you mean by that?
I don't want to get into trouble because I'm still learning. I'm still reading a lot about all this.
But so then just from your perspective, though.
And meander without knowing the result.
Yes. So where okay, are we, yeah, that's where exactly are we what I'm about to vomit diarrhea in a puddle. The thoughts. I think that same-sex couples do go through different issues. When we talk, like, okay, I'm totally going to contradict the whole start of this podcast about defining labels and roles. I think the masculine and the feminine within a relationship of marriage, has it always been seen as they're the two puzzle pieces that sort of fit, and there's different roles within? I'm not talking about gender as such, but I think
polarity.
Mainstream.
You're talking about polarity. So like the feminine energy and masculine energy.
Yeah, and yeah. Most people associate, yeah. Okay, so the female has this role, she does this, and the male. And that's
we
how
we speak
our,
about the energies energy. Of masculine and feminine a lot on this show. So our listeners will have right. a bit of a concept.
Which can be embodied in either a man or a woman.
Exactly.
Yes. Well,
exactly.
Where they all yeah. are. Yeah. We all have female,
both
feminine
yep.
and masculine energies within each gender.
Absolutely.
So just so we're all clear on
yes,
this.
Yes, yes. So I guess I think our species for the last, thousands of years, since marriage began, maybe it was an institution that was meant for the two roles of domesticity, like living together in a house. Someone has to bring home bacon. Someone has to take care of the house. I'm not saying it's either role
yeah.
or either sex, but yeah. I think now that we're starting to question gender and we're looking at equality, it's kind of like, hey, these roles that we've always thought are really wrong and outdated. But then you get two guys living in a house together, and one of us has got to do the cooking, one of us has got to do the cleaning, one of us is probably going to earn more money than the other.
Yeah.
How do we deal with that? Because we don't have that 1,000 years of, hey, this is the expectation of
so
the heteronormative way, I guess.
So has that in itself been another challenge to then navigate through?
Yeah.
Well, it's current, right? So
yeah.
you're sitting in it.
We're kind of like, yay, now we can get married. When are we going to do that?
You're engaged.
Yeah, we're engaged. Yeah. And when we got engaged, we weren't allowed to be married. So we were like, oh, it'll be years before we have to deal with that. And then when it was a yes vote, we were like, oh, shit. But no, there's no pressure. Like, we will still get married when we want to get married. Yeah, I guess, I don't know. Like, do we want kids? Do we want to do all that? Do we want to buy a house and get a mortgage and start a family in Sydney like our straight friends have?
Mm.
We don't have any, like, gay relationships being modelled to us.
Is there a pressure you feel now that the marriage equality vote came through to be like, okay, well now...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're constantly
asked and those,
when you're getting married.
And those kind of roles still that are projected around what a marriage is and, oh, well, how does that work in your relationship? And I'm trying to fit you and Ash into these kind of roles that I know what a marriage is.
Mm. I guess it's almost like if there's this heteronormative way and we just adopt that way, I don't know, it's almost...
Then what was it all for?
Well...
I mean, obviously for equality, but what I find as a person that stands very closely alongside but still on the outer of having the feelings that you've had and going through family things and not knowing where you define and who your examples are, standing kind of the outside of the box of that, the one thing that I have found within the community to be the most inspirational and transformative for my own development has been able to see different things.
Yeah.
From the gay community, what I was able to be told, and I'm going to get emotional, I've done this on the show before, the gays were the first people that looked at me and said, you are fucking fabulous for who you are. All of your differences.
Yeah.
So are we now with this marriage situation going to move into a point where we start beiging into each other anyway?
Yeah.
And that might seem like a selfish thing that I get to have all of it. Like I get to have the straight life and I get to get the benefits from gays having to go through what they get through. I'm not, you know, I understand that that's definitely not easy. But at the same time, I get really scared that, oh my God, I looked around at all these weddings and it was so much more than the wedding. It was like, are these now going to be where just no matter what you fight for, and of course it's equality, not a wedding that you're fighting for, but does it just mean that we end up still just continuing to merge into one form of each other?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. I think diversity is important wherever it is, and that you define how you are distinct from the mainstream. Like,
because such we a big all believer are. In that.
We all are, exactly.
We just mute it.
And you can just toe the line and kind of find comfort in the herd, I guess. It's like that sheep mentality.
Mm.
But that's not me. And I just, I think it is the harder road is to kind of define yourself.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I've always thought marriage is monogamy.
Mm.
It's not for everyone, and I guess it's something that Ash and I are asking each other. Are we going to only ever have sex with each other for the rest of our lives?
Mm.
And I guess every couple would go through that, wouldn't they?
Important question that I don't think all couples have the conversation of.
No.
Because you get married and then somewhere along the line, you might have seen a movie, your mum and dad taught you this, so I guess marriage means no cheating. Yeah, cool. That's about as much. And even when I was having the conversation with Ben before we got married, I felt like I was almost like alluding to the fact that maybe I would want to cheat by having the open conversation. Like
yeah.
even just by having yeah. it was like me thinking he was going to be thinking back to me, is she worried about the commitment thing? And I was like, I don't know
but
what
they
the
weren't,
future...
But they weren't things that you thought about pre-marriage?
Well, I'd never thought about getting married. So when I thought about getting married, I wanted to be very honest with what that meant for us and what that meant for us in terms of cheating and being attracted to other people and sleeping with other people.
Yeah.
And we both landed on the same page, but we still landed on a page of we will work through it as we go.
Yes.
That there is not one rule. Like,
absolutely.
At the moment, we stand on that... we don't want to be with other partners and that we are. And I'm fairly certain that's how it's going to be for the majority. Like, I wouldn't ever want to say I might want to open relationship down the track when I think that Ben is a pretty monogamous person. Like, I don't think that's what something he's going to want. But I wanted to have the conversation of saying we need to be honest with where we are if that changes.
Yes.
And I think that's really important and was very scary to discuss.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's just, it's the unknown, I guess.
Yeah. But was that scary around the frame of marriage?
Well, I'm reading a lot of books on monogamy at the moment and like, is it natural? Why do we as a species do it and have we always done it? And it kind of puts people in this weird little sort of relationship with each other where it's almost possession and then that the sex is the definition of the love. And if you were to ever break the sex bond, then the love is compromised.
Sex isn't love and love isn't sex. Yeah, right. Yeah. We always put them in the same. In the same. Within the same sentence.
And,
yeah.
So, like, scientifically, like, they're saying one person cannot be everything sexually for the other person, and that's such an unrealistic ideal within monogamy that we just think that... Because I guess the question that if your partner came to you and said, hey, would we ever consider an open relationship? Your initial response would be, why am I not enough for you?
Yeah.
But one person can never be enough for the other. Like,
that adds a recipe for... But especially if we're just talking sex,
too. Especially if we're just talking sex.
Yeah. But also, we were just talking about it on a show that we did, was just, like, put sex to the side. It's really important to remember that your partner can't be everything for you in all elements of your life.
Yes, sense absolutely. Of friendship, support. Yeah.
So why then do we expect that with sex also? Yep. It is an interesting thing. I suppose that is a different... I reckon it, and this is a generalization, but I do think that conversation does land very differently with men and women too, because I do feel like sometimes the drive and the need for that kind of relationship, or I guess... what drives you to have sex and what it means to you emotionally is a little bit different.
And that's evolution. That's also science. There's different chemicals involved, and the reason why we do find a mate of the opposite sex is to reproduce. But then I guess if we're then talking about gender roles and defining relationship, we've got two guys in our relationship. And I speak to a lot of gay couples that do have open relationships and maybe have set up this rule where it's like a... don't ask, don't tell. Do whatever you want, but come home to me and I won't ask. That is not what Ash and I want. We've never, ever seen people separate to each other. And I don't think I'd ever want that type of relationship. But I think, I don't know, just questioning that has really offended a lot of people in my life. And it's something that we don't really want to talk about, that we want to sell this fairy tale of monogamous love and marriage.
And how success.
Fucking boring. Yeah. And how ridiculously unrealistic. Look at every fucking Joe Blow that's fucking someone else after work.
What is the statistic on divorce? Like, exactly. Something's not right.
It's more than 50%. Yeah. More than half of marriages
end in divorce. And I promise you, you don't have those conversations. You don't have the difficult ones about sex, about cheating, about what would happen if you have an emotional connection with someone at work.
Yeah.
You don't have those. You will suffer for it. And that's why I said to Ben, this is uncomfortable right now, and I know you might... I don't want you to go to bed thinking, I've thought all these things, but I want us to have them now for our relationship because I believe that it's investing in that stuff.
But it's interesting how it goes back to the point that we were talking about before. Like, if you take away this sense of judgment and what it actually means to want to physically have sex with a person that's other than the person that you're married to and love... if you take away all of the judgment as to what that would actually mean to your partner and to society, would there be people in marriages that sleep with other people?
Yeah, would there be more open relationships?
Of course there would be.
Yeah.
Of course there would be. Because it's like,
such a fine line though, isn't it? Because then there's like, there's always got to be like big, fat, open communication and both people
and respect,
on board.
And a real understanding that you're both okay with it. And the fact that one person might want it and the other person might not.
Mm.
Which means essentially, as my girlfriend who's been in an open relationship says, then it's not.
Mm.
Then it's not. If it's one not person work, wants it, it's not an open relationship.
Yeah.
That you both, in order to have an open relationship, you both have to want it.
Yeah.
If there's a one person that wants it, then therefore it's not open because one person doesn't. That's her description of it, and that's the way she's approached it.
Mm.
Work-wise, you know, you're kind of involved in all bits and pieces of projects we were talking to you about. Instagram and how that's essentially become your business. If you were to aspire to something next year, do you have a vision board? Like, what? How do you work that?
I've got lots of ideas. I mean, I really love the medium of television, and not so much television, just video content.
Mm.
I think I've done both radio and TV, but like I've got my dream sort of project that I'd love to work on and put out there and make.
What is it? Do you want to say or not?
Well, I guess I am fascinated with kind of the things we've been talking about, like the diversity of our world and sort of going out and meeting these people that may be on the fringe or kind of a minority or doing life different that questions the status quo. And kind of like going and understanding the choice of the lifestyle that they're living. And then, I don't know, getting the mainstream to see that. Because I'm really passionate and proud of.
Putting it into a picture book, you know. Something up.
I mean, if we don't see diversity, we will just become the all beige. Each other.
Well, it's what you were saying before. When you grow up, what's in front of you to be able to try and model and have the ability to aspire to and be brave in owning who you actually are and who you're not.
Yep. So, I don't know, I guess, like, Louis Theroux is a big hero of mine, but something along those lines, that's a big documentary. Cool. And yeah, like different sort of weirdo misfit groups that I know of. And you tell people stories about things you've done in your life and they're just like, you have such a weird like social or like your interests. It's just, for me, they're not weird. It's just that, I don't know.
Just different.
Yeah.
To the mass.
But for a lot of people, different is weird. That's the problem.
I would watch that.
I think it's good. I would eat that up.
These days, when you think of your sense of community, like we're not really talking to the people out on the street much. I did bake a cake for the old lady who lives next door last week because her dog died. I felt really embarrassed about giving it. Like, I was like to my partner, can you give it? I just can't. Anyway, it was really lovely and she had it. But what I'm trying to say is, okay, so communities, like it's all about our online community, like the friends that you have on Facebook or the people that you follow on Instagram.
Not to mention the versions of themselves that they're presenting as your friend too, which isn't actually
But you're choosing that. And if you're only choosing them based on what you know and the things that you're only interested in, that's all your world is ever going to be. And I think that's why we have politically so much division and people trying to... It's almost like we've forgotten that we live in a world where people aren't like us, that people have different religions or different beliefs. They look different or they want to eat different.
Well, it's a bit of a microcosm, I guess. Like it is. The pages that you follow, that perception is reality.
Exactly. And I think
people get a bit warped in thinking that everybody looks, talks, thinks
Hillary
like them.
It's the Hillary Clinton thing.
The Trump thing.
Everyone thought there's no way Trump can win because your feed was Hillary Clinton-like people. Yeah. Yeah. Like, there's no way you're going to have any kind of concept of what actually is reality because you've got this... you know, curated feed for exactly what your interests are on that
day. That just confirms bias. And same with Trump supporters or if you're a racist person or, you know what I mean? Like there's that confirmation bias constantly. So then how is somebody that, you know, your kind of business and your work surrounds social media and making money via that platform, do you sometimes feel a bit kind of...
Yeah, so it's a daily struggle.
It's a bit of a battle, you know, because you're trying
how authentic I am. And I mean, when you're doing a paid post that a brand has come to you and said, hey, this is the product we want you to advertise. Here's the everything about the product. I guess as an influencer, I would never choose a product that I would never use. But through the way that I present it, the content I put out about it, it's got to look believable. But that, like, making it look believable in itself seems not really authentic. And I think
that's... a lot of people are stuck in this hard place at the moment. And I'm hoping over the next few years somehow there becomes some form of separation. I don't know how, but I hope that there is a clearer definition of people trying to have a better intention behind making a business from this than people that have absolutely no value system. But at the same time, that hasn't happened in commercialism. Like, you don't know if Zara is getting their products from an awful factory and where fucking Target are. No one really knows. So maybe it's just a rosy picture that I've painted myself to feel better. Yeah. But I don't know how it's going to change.
Yeah, and it's a measurable, like the value is in the engagement. And that's measurable. So they know how many people looked at this post. They know how many people clicked on the website link that you gave. And... like that's money. Now, most businesses now, it's all about their social engagement. And I think then when you've got your own personal life that you're wanting people to engage with, you're just seeking the validation. Like, it's so hard when you're doing business stuff. It's okay. We understand it. It's a business. But when it's your own personal life and you're putting up a picture of your kid that did something funny and you didn't get the likes that you thought it would get, like, I see some young mums that their pages are just their kid and the cute things that the kid's done, and the kid is their world, and who are they showing this off to? Like, are they showing it off to their other mums? Are they showing it off to the family that lives interstate to see the kid?
I think a lot of the kid bloggers now are doing it for work. Like, I think a lot of mums that are starting to do it, and not just like ones that have, you know, have had radio shows or, you know, were a journalist at one point, or
just generally actual general people.
General people are putting photos of their kids, hoping that they will then be able to.
But I think, but that's where it's moved. Yeah, I think in the last few years, though, there's this real kind of, you know, how people that, if you've worked in radio or telly, or have that, you know, kind of sense of people, you know, a following or people being interested in what you do. Yeah. Now that's just your general everyday person.
But it can, well, it can be.
Down the, you know, that lives next door a lot of time.
Even,
but I think, it's interesting, isn't it, though, where it's like, we even spoke to Sophie Kasher about this, where she was like, I started years ago when it was, and I suppose similar to us in that, and you too, that real genuine, authentic, warts and all, here I am type vibe, where she was like, that was before it was a thing. That's when people were like, oh, that's out there. That's confronting, because up till this point, we're pretending that being a mum's easy. Mm. She's like, it's interesting when people tap into something. So now mums have gone, fuck, people are really connecting to authentic shit.
Yeah.
So I'm now going to pretend I'm authentic, that my baby's thrown up on me.
Yeah.
But that in itself, pretending to be authentic is not authentic. It's such a head fuck. Because here we are going, we've been doing this for a long time. Like, for 6 years, we've been here, warts and all, having these kinds of conversations that for a long time, especially for women, have been controversial and raw and fucking
but on the
real.
But on the flip side of that, it hasn't all been innocent. I've been thinking about this recently. You know, at the end of the day, like, the Thinker Girls, to some degree, has been a great thing, but it was a strategy too.
Yeah, but I was just about to say that. I wasn't finished saying the point. That's where I was leading to. It's that weird middle mark of the sliding doors moment that you're talking about, where you're selling this authenticity and rawness, but you're selling it for a reason. Like, there's a clear line and decision around what you're sharing and what you're not.
Yeah, it's purposed. It's like you've thought about it.
Yeah, and I think, and I guess that is where it comes a full circle to our chat where we began this whole conversation, which is, I suppose, the only real gauge we have after just listening to you both and then thinking about it is intention, right? Like, I think that's the only thing you can control, and then hope that, just like how you fell in love or how it all worked out with Ash, or how you meet someone, or how you randomly run into someone in the street, that energetically it's kind of communicating to people in a different way, and hopefully that gets out in its own form from the intended purpose that you put it up.
Yeah, I've understand got to, why you're doing the things
and
you're
asking
doing.
Yourself
why are you doing social
why?
Media? Yeah. So that, like, talking about brands, I don't want to be a social influencer for the rest of my life. I think I'd love an Instagram or a Facebook page, but God, would it be refreshing if I didn't have to think, oh, I can't post this because it might cost me that brand relationship.
Mm. Like, yeah, I totally am with you.
Let's kind of leave on an up. Is that an up? Probably not.
I've frothed this chat.
Same.
Absolutely loved it. Tim Dormer, it was just...
It's been stunning.
It is really great and fucking unique. We speak to so many people and we wouldn't have been able to go down that many rabbit holes.
Oh, everyone. Yeah, there was a lot of rabbit holes.
Appreciate it. Thanks, mate.
Oh, thanks, girls.
If you like that podcast, there's heaps more where it came from. Go to thethinkergirls.com.au and go through all of our oldie apps. Dare ya.
This podcast is presented by Stacey June and Christy Mercer. It's also produced by me, Stacey June, and produced and edited by Jordan Lott.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.